Welcome back to Upstate's Health Link on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, living in central New York, we've all heard of Frank Baum, the acclaimed author of The Wizard of Oz. And his poor health apparently played a seminal role in his career as an author and storyteller. And here with the inside story about this is Dr. Harold Smullyan. He's a professor of medicine specializing in cardiology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Smullyan. Thanks for coming in today. Yeah. So you've just written a paper, I understand, describing Frank Baum's cardiac problems and his death from congestive heart failure. I think it was like in 1919, which was 20 years after he wrote The Wizard of Oz. So tell us about this. Why did you get interested in this, and how did you put this story together?
Well, initially I had no interest in this, but I was contacted by a former colleague here, Dr. Robert Pinels. Bob was the head of rheumatology in the Department of Medicine, and he left here some years ago, and we've been in contact since. He's since retired and has made a retirement project of investigating the obscure causes of illness of famous people. When he decided to investigate the cause of illness of L. Frank Baum, he realized that Baum had been born in central New York, had a lot of time in central New York, and died of heart disease, and I came to Bob Pinel's mind as a potential colleague. He needed a cardiologist, preferably from central New York.
Yeah. So tell me how you went about all this.
Well, he tackled the part about Frank Baum more than I did, although I did go to Byrd Library and look at some of Baum's original papers that are stored there. My major responsibility was taking on the description of medicine at the time of Frank Baum's illnesses, to see what could have been known about his symptoms, his signs, and his illnesses.
So what did you learn about his health history? I mean, first of all, where was he born? You said he was born central New
York. He was born in Chittenango. And the house site still stands, although I think the house that's built on the site is probably different.
Mm-hmm.
But he then moved to Syracuse after his father had a lot of success in business. As a child, he was very frail and had a lot of symptoms which were attributed to heart disease at that time. Although in 1856, 1860, there was very little known about heart disease.
There were no cardiologists then.
There were no cardiologists.
Right, then. So it was basically general medicine trying to figure out why this child was having. So what kind of symptoms was he showing? And did you think he may, I know that classically a lot of young children might end up with rheumatic heart disease and therefore have symptoms.
Rheumatic heart disease was a possibility, but his son, who wrote the primary biography of L. Frank Baum, thought it was probably congenital heart disease. At least that's what they were told by their doctors at the time.
So he was born with some heart problems.
That was the idea. I rather doubt that, but that was the idea at the time.
So but throughout his life he had heart problems? Was that what you found evidence of?
Yes. He was sent, because he was kind of frail, he was thought to need more discipline, and he was sent to the Peekskill Military Academy when he was about 12 years old. And he had a bad time there, having been disciplined, and had a fainting spell, and so he was brought home from there.
That's quite interesting to think that they thought because he was frail that he needed more discipline. I don't get that connection.
Well, I don't either, but that's where he went.
But that's where he went. So he had a fainting spell, and they thought they were heart attacks of some kind? Is that what happened?
They did. And the belief that he had heart disease existed for the rest of his life.
So he was fully apprised of that. I mean, it was something that he lived with and saw, identified himself as being someone with heart problems.
I think so, yes.
So how did those episodes in his early life or as his life progressed affect his life choices? What did he do? How did he end up being the L. Frank Baum we now know?
Well, he was both successful and unsuccessful at a lot of different occupations. From running a newspaper, working in the theater, operating a baseball team.
Wow, it's pretty diverse.
Very diverse. A lot of interests, none of which were uniformly successful. In the end, not quite the end, he went all the way out to South Dakota thinking that in the Midwest opportunities would be greater. But he also was thought to have heart disease out there because of the developments of chest pain and so on. So... And from there, he went to Chicago And it was there that he wrote The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Now, it seems to me, though, I read somewhere in your paper, actually, that you wrote, that a seminal episode was when he went to a so-called cardiologist, but obviously there were no true cardiologists back then, who then told him or advised him to attempt to lead a more sedentary life.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And was that kind of the seminal moment that shifted his path away from some of these other careers?
It seems so. But he had been a storyteller for children for many years, and I suppose that when he was advised to do things and lead a more quiet life, that he went back on writing some of these stories up.
It's interesting because you also mentioned that he had been in the theater as well. So there was obviously that kind of raconteur, actor part of him that was always alive.
That's true. That's true. There's a wonderful story about how the land of Oz, how the name was chosen. He was apparently telling stories to a group of children one day, and one young child, incidentally named Dorothy, asked him what the name of this place was. Not having a name right in mind, he looked around the room, and there was a file cabinet with letters on it, what the drawers contained, and the final drawer was labeled from O to Z.
Oh, my goodness.
And so he called the land of his imagination the Land of Oz.
Amazing, amazing. So he wrote The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and how did that change his life?
Well, the book was a success in large measure because of his association with William Densmore, who was an illustrator at the time. He had a hard time getting the book published, but when Denslow's illustrations became available, and they raised some money so that they would be in color in the book, the publishers agreed to put it out, and it was a big success, and it was for the first time in his life he had some real money in his pocket.
And at that point, it was very, very popular as a published work, but at that point, it was many, many years later that it was picked up and made into a movie. Is that correct?
That's correct. The book was initially published in 1900, and I believe it was 1933 mm-hmm. when his son, Frank Baum, had already died. And his son sold the rights of the book to Samuel Goldwyn.
For Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Yes,
yeah.
For $33,000, and later sold it to MGM for $75,000.
Wow. Well, at that time, that was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money, yeah.
Wow. So I also read somewhere, I think, again, in your article that you pointed out, that when he led this more sedentary life and was writing more and more, he tended to eat foods that perhaps weren't so great for him from a cardiac standpoint. Tell us about that.
Well, he did. He had what today would be considered terrible diet. He had lots of meat, lots of fats, lots of calories, and ate these things all through the day, starting with breakfast.
And no exercise, obviously.
And no exercise, because he was advised to have a sedentary existence. And so, and he smoked. And so he did all the wrong things we would consider today.
What's amazing to me is that he was seen by several physicians throughout his life, all of which knew, or throughout his life, there was always this concern for his heart. But, I mean, does it make sense to you that no one drew the connection between these kinds of dietary habits, smoking, all of that, and a heart condition?
I think those connections were not made at that time. He had what was called angina pectoris, which a term we still use today, which simply means pain in the chest. And at the time of his life, these pains in the chest were not related to heart disease. No one knew exactly what they were from. And so although he had the term angina pectoris attached to him, at that time it didn't necessarily mean heart disease.
And in fact, what was happening is there was narrowing of his arteries. Is that correct?
Well, that's our supposition, yes.
So at the time, what were they able, or what would they have been able to do in terms of diagnosis? I know I read again in one of your earlier papers that the stethoscope was available, so they were able to at least listen to the heart.
Yeah, that's correct. We reviewed the kinds of things that might have been available to help diagnose his condition. The stethoscope had been widely used, and in the textbooks written for medical education near the time of his death, murmurs and things that were audible using the stethoscope had been well described. So the stethoscope was readily used at those times.
But were there any other tools available?
Well, even the blood pressure was not widely taken at that time. There were several preliminary efforts to take the blood pressure in a very primitive way, but the blood pressure cuff, as we now know it, wasn't used widely until about the time of his death. Chest x-rays were not really popularized until a year or so after he died. The development of x-rays by William Rankin was done some years before, but it was never developed to the point where it could be used as a chest x-ray. Actually, Thomas Edison used the techniques to invented the cardiac fluoroscopy.
Wow.
So one could either look at the chest by x-ray or by fluoroscopy, but neither was widely used at the time of Frank Baum's illness.
It's interesting because today in recent shows, I've actually interviewed a gentleman who's the head of cardiac imaging here at Upstate, and they're using this cardiac MRI where they can literally look at the functionality of a beating heart in such extreme detail. I mean, it's so stark when you look at the contrast of what was taking place back then and what we have today.
Well, that's almost 100 years ago when he died. And so a lot of things have happened since then.
So do you think he could have been successfully treated at the time, had we known more?
Probably not. The other thing that wasn't readily available at the time, which is now so much a part of cardiology, is the electrocardiogram. That was invented some years before, but was not available for commercial use and was not available to patients unless they were able to come to the EKG rather than taking the EKG to the patient. So he probably didn't have an electrocardiogram either. But even if they had known what he had, there would have been fewer things to do. There was no catheterization, there was no stents, there was no surgery. He could have been advised to have a better diet.
So in your estimation, what do you think the cause of death was finally?
Well, finally, in the description in his biography by his son, he describes that he was short of breath, that he had swelling of his feet, suggesting that he was in heart failure, and that he had an erratic heartbeat. Our best guess for what that might be is atrial fibrillation. And so we were guessing that he did have coronary heart disease and died in heart failure with atrial fibrillation associated.
But that he'd already started with a heart that was compromised in some ways.
Yes, it's hard to believe that he had congenital heart disease or rheumatic heart disease. Both of those problems are usually associated with murmurs.
And he had no sound.
We don't know that anyone listened for a murmur, but stethoscopes were widely available, and description of the murmurs had been well made during his life.
What strikes me as so interesting, obviously, he's a very colorful figure, and he's a local figure, and we all take pride in the fact that he's a local figure. But that always struck me, even as a child watching The Wizard of Oz as a movie, how the it was almost prescient for him to have the Tin Man as needing a heart transplant or needing a heart. He lost his heart, and I think that doesn't that say a lot for what he must have seen about his own life.
Well, his own life early life was spent in central New York, where his family had a farm somewhere around the Brewerton Road today. And there was a road that went by that was repaired by a tin man, and it may have been painted yellow, which may have had something to do with his descriptions of Oz.
Well, there's an awful lot in there that's so interesting. And I thank you so much for coming in and telling us all these really wonderful facts and information. It's fascinating. My guest has been Dr. Harold Smullyan. He's a professor of medicine specializing in cardiology at Upstate Medical University. Stay right there. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on air right after this short break.